All right, here we go. Night of the Living Dreads. I am Otis B. Dreads. We have, of course, Mr. Jackal Monkey with us. How are you today, sir?
I'm fucking fantastic. Fantastic.
Well, good. Not just regular fantastic. You are fucking fantastic. Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, as most people know, yes, this is an 18 for show. Why don't I just throw this up here?
Warning.
Explicit warning. The following video contains explicit language which may be offensive to some viewers and or inappropriate for children. The content within this video is intended for mature audiences only. And no, there is no disclaimer for the immature host. That'd be me.
None.
And that guy. None. Hey, none. So we can be as immature as we want. Night of the Living Dreads, Dreads with no A, .com. That's where we can get all the audio podcasts out there. And you can go check that out over there. And plus our YouTube page. We're not as bitching as some YouTube or channels. And we don't have our own little personal YouTube.com/Night of Living Dreads. But if you put in the search, the Night of Living Dreads podcast, you'll find it, and you'll find this interview or discussion, because I hate that fucking word.
Yeah, I
really do. It sounds so formal. I know I beat this into the ground all the time, but it does. It sounds too damn formal, like a police interrogation. We're just going to have a discussion today, and you can find this discussion as well as all of our past. We've had some pretty good ones, here in the past month or so. We talked to Dan Yeager, Tommy McLaughlin, Mick Strawn. We just had Robert Ray Schaefer on, who plays Psycho Cop, and of course in The Office. So it's been a pretty busy month or so for us, Jackal Monkey, and it's only getting better with this here show. Before we get to that, though, why don't you tell people where they can get a mask, my friend?
Hey, you want you a custom badass latex mask, or you want a hockey mask or a Hannibal Lecter mask, hit me up. Facebook, Nightmare Ninja Studios, and we'll make your nightmares become a reality.
That's right. That's a great tagline. You made that up all on your own.
All by my lonesome.
That's great. That's great, man. You're a master of many trades.
Many trades. Hey, if you need a mask or a prop for a movie coming up, hit me up.
Or a cat.
Or a cat.
Or a cat.
Or a cat. He's frisky.
Actually, he's Marnius.
Let's get right to it. We have Mr. Marcus Slaybein, the writer, director, producer. Again, a jack of look at that. Look, he's got a pissed off look on his face. That's why I picked that one. He looks kind of angry. Like, are you really taking a picture of me right now?
Hey, he's a busy man. Like you say, he's trying to get to work.
He's very busy. You can see he has the aviators hanging off his shirt there, and we're gonna see. He loves his aviators. We were gonna have a aviator off. I was gonna throw mine on, but without further ado, Mr. Marcus Slaybein, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Awesome, awesome. Was that a good intro for you?
I love that. I was. I don't know if you could actually hear me laughing, but I was actually laughing.
No, we couldn't. But I did see you laughing. Here we go. We're gonna have a little aviator off.
Hello.
There we go. We'll leave it to the viewers to, see who they think is cooler,
Yeah, I mean, yours are pretty bitching, so I'm not going to lie.
All right, well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Marcus, for joining us. I didn't mention in the beginning, but this is being pre-recorded, so when you see it, don't comment, okay, like it's live, because we'll be there. We'll be there when it does air, but... thank you for you're a very busy guy, Marcus. Thank you for taking the time out to spend with us.
No, seriously, thank you guys for having me. I truly appreciate it. I'm looking forward to this. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Well, it is going to be a lot of fun. Now, you are the reason we have to, pre-record is because you're working on a film that, some things you can say, some things you can't, and we certainly don't want to be responsible for something happening. I will not be able to sleep at night, and you are writing and directing Night of the Living Dead 2. Correct. Now, I know that Jackal Monkey has, a question that you may or may not be able to answer. And after he's done, I want you to just tell everybody, we're going to get this out in the open, what you can and can't tell us. And then we're going to move on to some just all out overall horror talk. Jackal Monkey, the floor is yours, sir.
All right. I mean, of course, being you're obviously into horror stuff, and being a huge horror fan, and being a writer and an effects guy myself, how does something like Night of the Living Dead 2 like drop in your lap like that? Like, how, like, can you tell us how you got involved with such a project?
Well, it's pretty much a dream project. I mean, like, anything in that world, is really a dream. It kind of came a while ago. I used to, the reason why I'm looking up is because I have a poster from the film that I met Terry Alexander on, which is, we all know is John from Day of the Dead. So we've done about four or five films together, and this film called The Last Call. I tried to reunite the three of them through cameo. So Terry stars in that one, and then I got a cameo from Lori Cardill. And we all hit it off right from the start. And we all kind of started talking, and the idea of doing something in this world kind of came up. And I was in a Forbidden Planet actually afterward with and I bumped into Vinny Petrosini, who's one of the producers there, and we just started talking, and we started kind of like throwing things back and forth, and like I mentioned, well, we both have access to Lori. I mean, he did a web series with Lori called Doomsday, where she has a cameo in it, and then both of us, and I had Terry, and so we're like, well, wait a minute, well, there's got to be some way to get Jarlath. And maybe we can find some way to like write something in the zombie world. And then one thing led to another. We got a hold of Jarlath, and the idea of doing a film like this came into play. It's taken on many forms. There was originally a TV series that we were trying to work with to do like a 10 episode type of thing. But now we're going with the feature film route. And it's kind of taken on a life of its own, really and truly. I mean, where we are right now, it's kind of like I am pinching myself every morning being like, yeah. Oh, am I really working on, Night of the Living Dead 2 with the cast that we have and, the cast that we've been able to mention and the people that we have yet to mention. And there's some awesome stuff that we cannot mention at all, but I know because I'm a huge horror fan. I'm a huge fan of these films myself. I mean, the Evil Dead series is what made me a horror fan. I am a Bruce Campbell fanatic, and I used to fear horror, and then I saw Army of Darkness. I was one of the six people that saw Army of Darkness in the theater, and I saw the series backwards, and each film changed my life. And after that, my mother thought I was going to become a serial killer because I had all the gore all over the walls. And then I started watching Monster Vision with Joe Bob Briggs.
Yeah.
And once that went off the air, I became an insomniac, and then I was just fiending for anything. So, I just discovered Romero's work, and I just fell in love with it. And, like everything. I mean, Martin, Knight Riders, like all the whole lineup. I love everything that he does. And, it's really, really awesome to be able to play in that type of a sandbox, so to speak.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's jump off the Night of the Living Dead, which, you know, how appropriate that, you know, you're on the Night of the Living Dreads.
I know that, like, seeing the name, like, right away, like, when I got the first message about this, I was like, all right, this is cool.
Well, thank you.
What did you, let's go back to the start of your getting into the film industry. What did you start out as, a writer, director? Did you do any acting? What really got your foot planting in it?
So if we're going to go back. So originally I wanted to be an actor. That's what I originally wanted to do. But then I realized I really couldn't act. And that was a lot by people just telling me, dude, you're not good at acting. But, you know, after a while, like I took a hint. But like, I mean, I used to run around and do like little skits, you know, with my friends back home in Massachusetts. And we would do like little videos that are probably somewhere on the internet. I have no idea if they're still up there. But like, I always wanted to do more. And like, one of the things that always intrigued me was really Evil Dead. Watching that series backwards, you watch Army of Darkness, which was a big studio movie, and then you watched Evil Dead 2, which had a budget, and it was just, to me, is one of the greatest and most perfect films ever made.
I'd have to agree. It's my favorite out of them. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and it's also a movie that you can put on at a party, and no matter what scene it's on, if somebody comes in, they're going to stop and they're going to watch it, whether they've seen it or they haven't seen it. It is one of the, it's such a beautiful film. But then you go to Evil Dead, which is my personal favorite. Even though I do think Evil Dead 2 is a better movie, I think Evil Dead is one of the most inspirational movies I've ever seen in my life. Because it shows, you know, what persistence, what passion, and what never, never, ever stopping what you believe in can create. And type of spirit is what I thrived with. And that was like, I was like, well, fuck it. If he can fucking do it, like, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to fucking do it. So I started, I went to film school. You know, well, actually I used to run a horror movie review website that's now defunct and off the internet. But, it allowed me to be able to meet lots of horror celebrities. Like, I mean, I met Romero, I met the entire cast of The Devil's Rejects, I've met Bruce Campbell, I've interviewed like everyone from Halloween, like the list goes on and on. But that kind of gave me like the confidence to be able to be like, well, you know, if I sat down and talked with George A. Romero for 20 minutes, why the fuck can't I go out to New York and go to film school and try and make my own films? And if I've done this, why can't I? So I went to film school for a year and got to make 8 short films, which was fun. It was a good like hit the ground running type of thing. And then I started just working in the industry. Like I've done every single department minus wardrobe, except for my own films, but I hate doing wardrobe. nothing against wardrobe people. Costume designers are amazing, but I mean my wardrobe is like horror t-shirts and
same here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. like when you're doing like a fashion shoot, I'm like, I think they'd look good in, you know, wearing a, you know, Joe Pilato with a gun in his hand, you know. But then I just started PAing, and I took every film that I got and tried to learn something from it, you know, whether I was doing production assistant work, wherever I was set dressing, art directing, doing sound, everything. And I think once you start learning, I honestly think it's a really good thing to do. I think if you go into every single department, you actually give it like a strong, like, okay, I'm going to learn the department so I can figure out what makes it tick, you know, then you start realizing and saying to yourself, okay, well, now I understand why it takes, you know, special effects this long to do this type of an effect, or like why when I want to have this room lit a certain way, it's going to take this much time. And then you can
start appreciating each department and their worth in the whole movie making, you know, spectrum there. It's not just a director, it's not just an actor. I think a lot of the general public think, well, that actor made the movie, and maybe so, maybe they played a great role and did a fantastic job. But there is a whole gamut of people involved that have to make everything work, from a gaffer to a wardrobe person to production designer. Everybody plays an important role. So I agree. And especially being a, director among, all the other things that you've done, I think especially with a director, it's good to understand beforehand what every department does. And then you can set, this is what I want. And I know you can do it because it's your fucking job. Okay, this is what I want. To understand that and appreciate it, I think probably means a lot to all of them.
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree with everything you said. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, when you can, like, understand what it takes for everybody, then you can also know how to aid them. You know, if they need extra time to do something, I like to, you want to be able to give it to them so they can put their best foot forward. Because none of us ever wanted to, be rushed. I mean, but that's really what film is. It's hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. Oh, well. We can't shoot this scene right now. So we got to shoot, the head explosion over here on this side.
Right.
We got to shoot that now because sunlight. And it's like, but like at the end of the day, being able to have everyone's back and having the film, it's a fan, to me, it's a big family. You know what I mean? Like I love I'm the type of guy where I love to work with the same actors. I love to work with the same crew. I love working with the same people. And I think, it becomes a family to you, and once you have that, once you have that family, everyone's going for the greater good. No one's there checking their watch being like, well, we're going 12 hours. Okay. But it's like, yes, we're going 12 hours today, but we got to get, it's all about like, I would much rather go 14 hours and get what we need than lose that sleep than to get a nice early night and not be able to get what we need and have to go back and do reshoots or the film isn't as good, And I think with a lot of the people that I've, been able to work with, especially lately, everyone has that vibe and everyone has that like can do attitude. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's like, you can always tell when a film is made with love, and that's, that's vital. You feel it from the cast. Like you watch, I'm a huge Edgar Wright fan. I love Edgar Wright. Shaun of the Dead, Hoffa's World's End. Mm-hmm. I'm dying for Last Night in Soho. I don't know what this film is going to be, but it's going to be amazing. But like, you can clearly tell there is so much love from everybody. When you watch Shaun of the Dead, there's love in the writing. There's love in the source. Yes. There's love in the cast.
It comes through the characters. That's a great movie. You actually believe they're sitting in a pub somewhere, having a few cold ones. You believe that they're friends. And that really comes through on, in the final product.
Yeah. And I think that's why that film is transcending through the generations. I think like 50 years from now, we're still going to be looking at that. We still look at Return of the Living Dead, which is like also one of the greatest zombie comedies of all time. And you look at Night, Dawn, Day, you look at all these films, and there's reasons that we still connect to them. There's reasons that even though the times have changed, the way we react, the way we look at things, social, the heart of the film stays. One of my favorite films of all time is Jaws. And it's another one of those films that is a film that never should have been made. I mean, not that it shouldn't have been made, but like, the shark kept not working, kept malfunctioning.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see everything that went wrong with that film. And that's one of those films where Spielberg just persisted. They kept making. And everyone thought it was going to be the world's biggest flop. And it is one of the, arguably, the greatest movie of all time. I mean,
that movie scared the shit out of me. It was really my first kind of like introduction. And as I got older, I never really thought of Jaws as like a horror movie. But it was when, I'm like 7, 8 years old or however old I was and saw that, I was scared to go, to the beach and get in the water. I'm always looking for the fins. I'm listening for the fucking music,
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. that scared the living hell out of me. And I've said that numerous times. So, yeah, I've heard a lot of the horror stories that were involved with the mechanical shark and things like that. Jackal Monkey, do you have anything you want to interject? Because I want to hear about some filming fupas in your past that you know, we kind of mentioned a little bit with Jaws, but Jackal Monkey, do you have anything you want to add?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So what genre of horror are your favorite types of horror movies?
Oh, my favorite. Okay. So, I mean, obviously I love zombie films, but I love zombie films. I love zombie comedies. I'm a big 80s slasher type of guy. I'm a huge demons guy. I want to make like an actual, like a demons film. Like that is a dream film that I would love to make, as something in the vein of Evil Dead, obviously. But I mean,
awesome.
You know, I love the, like, I think like, you know, I love werewolf movies. I collect a lot of physical media. I mean, you can kind of see some of them. You see like a little stack back there. That's some watched ones. But I can't turn the computer this way, but I have about 2,000 DVDs and Blu-rays.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I just collect and love all of it. You know what I mean? But like, if I had to pick one, if I was like, you got to pick one genre. Oh, wow. Well, okay, now I just gave myself that. Okay.
It's hard.
It's really hard because, to me, I might have to say slasher. And it's because I think slasher is almost like, I look at like John Wick, and I think that is like a reverse slasher. You know, instead of a killer going around to knocking off people, it's a hero knocking off a bunch of people as a revenge thing. And I look at it as like the reverse slasher. And you know, like I'm a big, you know, action movie guy. Like I love Lethal, you know, Lethal Weapon is my favorite. Yeah. Danny Glover, all of them. I love Richard Donner. But like, I think you can tell amazing stories with that. And the thing I love about it is that slashers can be a little bit of everything. They can be a murder. You know, obviously most of them are mysteries, you know, but they can be that. They can be romantic. You know what I mean? They can be, you know, you look at something like, you know, Suspiria, they can be visceral. I wouldn't even call Suspiria a slasher, but I'm saying like, or like you look at it, like giallos.
Right.
There's so many great films, and they can be taken seriously. They can be hilarious. I mean, Blood Rage is probably the greatest Thanksgiving slasher I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have discovered that one recently. and I don't know. Yeah, but I'd have to go with that. And I'd say, like, top three would be, like, I would say slashers, zombies, demon slash creature movies, because I love me a good creature movie, you know.
Nice. Hell yeah, for sure. And that goes into we could go into that, what you were wanting to talk about too, Otis, like CG versus practical effects.
Yeah, I'm always curious. We've had some special effects guys, some directors and whatnot on, and I always feel the need to bring it up, because I believe, I can't remember who it was, maybe Joe Castro, who mentioned that, you know, if done in moderation, you can make both of them work in a film. If you overdo the CGI, I think sometimes it turns people away. I'm a huge fan of practical effects, the old school Tom Savini type stuff. Do you have a preference when directing? Do you try to use a little bit of both? Do you stick to one or the other?
Oh, I'm all practical. I try to avoid CG as much as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. Mainly because, like, to me, there's something about practical that I think makes it more believable. You know what I mean? It's like the fact that it's actually there. You know, if just, you know, like, you know, there has, it's not that there hasn't been great shark movies. It's the fact that there hasn't been another shark movie that has had a real shark that's not just people filming them in the water. You know what I mean? But like, there's something about that mechanical shark. Can you tell it's mechanical? Sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's not about that. It's about that there's something physically there, you know?
Right.
But I do think CG is good. Like, look, I loved, I don't know why it's just popping in my head randomly, but Pirates of the Caribbean Part 2. I know a lot of this. It's again, arguments about this one all the time. I love this film. I think it's super fun. I haven't watched it in forever, so maybe it's as an age. But the effects in that with the Kraken were astounding. Yes. I was blown away by those. To me, that the way that it moved, the way that they did those things, the CG in that worked, you know. But like, mm-hmm. that's also when you have the money, you have the time, you have the ability to do that. That's when CG should be. But it should not just be done just to replace things, you know.
Exactly.
You know, with Night of the Living Dead too, we are, you know, we're using a lot. It's going to be almost all practical. You know what I mean? Like, that's really,
that's awesome.
But, yeah, that's what we're all going for. And
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And Elizabeth Piper S, who's one of the producers, but she's also the one that's designing all the zombies and all that stuff. I mean, if you guys saw the picture of that we released of David Howard Thornton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Clown from Terrifier. So he was in a giant fat suit named Sharkbait Zombie. And she had a whole team of people that were designing parts of him, and had a giant bite of taken out of him that was from a shark type of deal. But it was all practical. I think the only, you know, thing that might be CG'd later on is a muzzle shot in this.
Mm.
I think that's it. Everything else has been practical from the bits that we've shot. I think that's the only thing.
And you know, I think more practical effects. Now, I love Zombieland 1 and 2, but I think, you know, there was, everything looked CGI.
Yeah.
There, you know, maybe other than the makeup of certain zombies and things like that, all of the kill shots, there was a lot of CGI, and it just they wore it out. In my opinion, still a great movie. I own both of them, but and they're entertaining. But I, you know, I'm more old school with the practical effects. I think it brings a lot more to the film. Like you said, with the shark, yeah, you Jaws. You know, Spielberg could have easily, you know, threw a CGI shark in there or something. But I think it also helps the actors too to have something right there in front of them. I think it brings out their performance a little bit.
Oh, totally. You know, like to me, there's nothing beats that. Nothing beats giving the actors something to act off of. And, right. You know, look, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, like you look at Lord of the Rings and the work Andy Serkis has done, and it's incredible what that man is done in a green suit, but getting mm-hmm. the performances that people get out of, you know, while acting off of some guy that's got balls all over his body. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
But like at the end of the day, like to me, you know, and I will probably get shot for this. I love both of them, American Werewolf in London. And I do love American Werewolf in Paris, but that was probably because it was one of my first theatrical horror films that I got to see. So it's got a soft spot for me. It does not compare. It's not even in the same ilk. But one of the biggest differences is American Werewolf in London, that werewolf transformation today is still the greatest werewolf transformation, hands down. And I will fight that. I will argue about that one. And
I agree with you on that one.
And Paris is, it's a very fun movie. But, like, let's be honest, nobody's looking back at the CG effects of, you know, Julie Delpy morphing that, like, looks like it belongs on a PlayStation 1 console. Like, even small things. I'm a big Walking Dead fan. I love The Walking Dead. I think they're going into their best seasons right now. You know, like, there are certain kills in that show that are astounding. Mm-hmm. And then there's certain kills that you can tell that they're saving on budget and CG, and you can tell that there's no retractable blade or anything. And,
right.
You know, to me, I agree 100%. Practical is always better. And if you can do practical, I just say go for it, especially because it's not like back in the 80s where like they were trying out a lot of stuff. You know, it's like there's so many things, there's so much, you know, like they didn't have DVD commentaries like the special effects people, they were figuring things right. out. Not that they're not figuring it out now, but now you've got like,
or YouTube.
Exactly. You know, you got you type in Tom Savini, you know, Day of the Dead, you know, and it's like Tom Savini showing you how he created stuff. And even watching right. that, the behind the scenes thing with him, and him specifically telling you how he did the brain zombie, where it was like it was just the brain that was left, And I still look at that and I'm like, how the fuck did he do that? Like, yeah. Yep, you're telling me how you did that. And I still don't know. It's the same thing with that movie, The Raid. Have you guys ever seen that one, The Raid?
Oh yeah. I fucking love it.
So the shot where the guy gets knocked off one of the buildings, they're basically in like a giant like apartment complex, and it's basically like it's Die Hard with like only like it's like Die Hard on crack. That's really what it is. And one of the guys gets knocked off, and he goes flying like four stories down. This is all one shot, and his back collapses and hits on one of the railings, and you see it snap. And the way they shot it all in reverse. And I watched the footage of the guy like laying there like this, and then they pulled him up and he reverse reacted. And I still, my brain is like, no, that can't be real. There's no way that that's what it is. They did crazy shit.
Holy shit.
Out of water in the second film. Spoilers, by the way. Sorry. but there's a car chase scene on a highway, and the camera goes from it's inside these guys. I think they're fighting in one car, and it comes out of the car. Like the camera was in the car, it comes out of the car, goes back to the car chasing them, and goes inside that car. And the way they did it was they were crazy motherfuckers, and there was a guy hiding in the car seat, grabbing the camera, passing it out the window to another car that was driving alongside the high speed car chase, and handed it off to the
car.
That stuff, I'm like, that is so crazy. It's that where there's a will, there's a way. And that's the I love that type of filmmaking. It's just like, that's the stuff that like gets me. That's what inspires me. Cause I'm like, okay, that's awesome. Like that's
that
not,
is good shit.
Yeah. That's not like, that's in no textbooks. That's not like,
right.
You know, they tell you not to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that don't sound like something you would learn in film school. That's something you come up with, like, hey, we want this shot in the film, and we're going to do whatever the fuck it takes to get this shot, regardless somebody has to hang out a damn car or, you know, passing cameras from one car to a next in a high-speed chase. We're making it fucking happen. It's going to happen.
Badass, though.
That is badass. I love the little movie magic things. I've always been a big fan of that, even as a kid, behind the scenes stuff. Now, you mentioned you're a big fan of werewolves. Would you say the Wolfman? What's your favorite Universal monster?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or/film. You can give us both. Favorite Universal film, classic monster film, or your favorite Universal monster.
Okay, so I would say, this is a tough one. I would have to say my favorite film is probably The Invisible Man, the original Invisible Man, because I think I watched it at like a later state. Like I didn't watch it as a kid. I watched it like a few years ago for the first time, and I was blown away by how amazing the effects were, how amazing the performances were, and how awesome his descent into madness was. I was like, I was blown away for a film in that time to tackle that type of subject, to go into that, and I thought that was absolutely astounding.
For sure.
My favorite monster, though, I'd have to say, hands down, is Frankenstein. Frankenstein's monster. I read all the books. I watched almost every incantation of it, and they're just—it's a beautiful, beautiful story. About,
it really is.
Just about just wanting to be accepted, you know. And there's so many layers, of so many levels, and I think it's one of the I think it's one of the pioneers of the monster of everything. I think it's literally, to me, that story, I think, has influenced almost everything that has come since then. You know,
I could agree with that. Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're going to go with my favorite black and white movie, it's easily Psycho. Psycho.
Oh yeah, well yeah, nice. Absolutely, yeah. Psycho freaked me the hell out, and I think that was really kind of almost as I got older, That sparked my intrigue in things like serial killing and true crime, because Norman Bates was somebody that could live down the street from you. This yeah. wasn't a grotesque monster that you see coming from a fucking mile away because he's got a hockey mask on, or he's got, you know, another mask on. He's wielding a chainsaw or a fucking knife. No, this is a person that you could have passed in the street and not even know. And I think that sparked a lot with me and got me into true crime and serial killers. And are you into true crime and serial killers? Is that oh, yeah. kind of, that's a big thing too for you?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've researched all that. I mean, to me, it's insane because it's insane. But one of the things that I think is insane is the fact that Norman Bates, Hannibal Lecter, Buffalo Bill, Leatherface, and the movie Deranged are all based on one human being.
Yeah.
Yep. And to me, a man, one human being to do the things that he did, that it took several incantations, several films down with over like 1960 to like 1991, you know, that they had, that they could finally tell almost his whole story. I don't want to say they've told, you know, everything. I mean, the movie Ed Gein with Steve Railsback, which he's incredible in that film. Mm-hmm. You have the different stages that they were allowed to show, like, the whole reason, at least this is one of the rumor things I've heard, because there's lots of stories about like Texas Chainsaw, but one of it was that they based it off of him, but they felt that it was not believable that one man could have done these heinous crimes, so they gave him a family type of deal. That's what I heard. But I mean, like, I've heard so many different versions from, you know, podcasts and hearing like Toby Hooper talking or Gunnar Hansen talking and mm-hmm. all that. But I think there's something in the reality. I think there's truth in all filmmaking. I think if you want people to be able to relate, the scariest things on the planet are reality. I think that's why the scariest films are things that are realistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exorcist came out at a time where a lot of people, you know, religion was very powerful, you know, and to see something like that, and it is quote unquote based on a true story. Amityville Horror is another one based on a true story. You know, Psycho is based on a true story. Like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like all the greatest films that terrified us, all based on true stories, all had truth to them, you know? And if you really break down Psycho, not only is it a character who could be the guy that, you know, walk past on the street, you know, who's walking his dog, he also gets you in a place that you are so fucking vulnerable. Like, what can you do? Someone's in power. What can you do? Like, you can't do anything. Like, it's what are you gonna do? Throw a fucking bar of soap at him? Like,
right. You're in his domain at that point.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's terrifying, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's also why like Halloween is terrifying. I mean, look, John Carpenter is also one of my favorites. I fucking love everything John Carpenter has done.
Yeah.
Like, I really hope that someone gives him money to make at least one more film out there. You know, he's one of the most underrated, greatest filmmakers of all time. But with Halloween, he hits you in your home. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. he hits you where you felt safe, and he just ruined that for you. So it's like, you know, but Wes Craven did the same thing. Wes Craven's was more sadistic though, because he's like, oh, your kids like to, you tell your kids that they're safe when they go to sleep, huh? Well, let me fuck you over with that there, buddy boy. Yeah, guess what? You die in your dreams, you die in reality. Yeah,
exactly. And then that was, you know, I can remember when I first got into the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, I thought that the concept was, you know, you talked about the vulnerability. And when are you most vulnerable? When you're in an REM stage sleep, you could have somebody in the middle, you know, and I often feared this as a kid. I don't know why. Maybe it was the movies I was watching, but I often feared, like, you know, I go to sleep. What if somebody just jumped on me, started hacking me to to pieces, whatever. That is, I mean, what am I going to do? Wake up out of a dead sleep and try to defend myself? You're in a very vulnerable spot. And that's what got me with the whole nightmare.
Yeah.
And then Halloween, to just add to your point on Halloween, what scared the shit out of me, and most people did have babysitters and or did babysit, and I had a babysitter, and it was right around the time that this movie came out. And so that scared the holy shit balls out of me. I'm like, what if my mom's gone? Okay, I got this stranger, not really a stranger. I really liked my babysitter, but yeah. What if somebody came in? She's not going to be able to protect me. I can barely protect myself, you know? And so that one is one of my you know, all-time favorites. Now, I think you're an 80s baby. I don't want to give your age out, but I think you're an 80s baby, aren't you?
Yes, I am. 1983.
And I'm a 70s baby, 72. Now, you almost kind of answered this question earlier. You said, you know, some of your favorite slashers are the 80s slasher. Is that just because you were born in the 80s? I mean, are you low?
No. I mean, so looks like I said, I did not get into horror until Army of Darkness. Now, I always liked growing up, Ghostbusters was my shit. My obsession, to the point where the guy at the video center told me I could not rent it again. He goes, no,
holy shit.
Because that's all I wanted, so I rented. It was that and Indiana Jones. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, and Last Crusade, because, you know, there's only three of them. It was those movies. But, like, I love – the thing I love about – like, and don't get me wrong, I also love 70s slashers. I do. I'm a big Dario Argento fan. I'm a big Fulci fan. Mario Bava. Like, I love their work. It's controversial to say, my favorite Argento goes, it goes number three is Suspiria. But this is also like saying, which $100 bill do you want more? You know,
right.
Suspiria,
they all spin the same.
Exactly. You know, it goes to Suspiria, Deep Red, which I think has the greatest twist in history. That also tells you at the beginning, which is like, it slaps you in the face. It says, you fucking idiot. It's right here. Like, I love that movie. But for me, my favorite Argento is Opera. I fucking love
that's opera. That's a great movie.
Yeah,
I even
have this right here. Please don't knock anything over. Okay. This little
stand. Oh, that's badass.
Yeah. That's so whenever awesome. I write, I have it. But I mean, first of all, the eyeball bit, that it's just, it's, oh my freak. God, thinking about
that,
it.
That shit freaks me out.
But my favorite shot of that movie is when the crow is flying around, but it's a giant camera and it's going around the room. And back in those days, the cameras were huge. They were like, you know, they were giant motherfucking cameras, 35 millimeter on giant cranes. And this was back in a day where, like, you know, safety wasn't the most important thing. And you just see it getting slower and lower and lower. And you start seeing, like, the extras and the people in the crowd start getting really scared because they're afraid they're going to get hit by this fucking crane. And it's amazing. But, like, my thing is this, is that, like, I love 70s. I love all the – but, like, for me, in the 80s, I do not think we appreciate what we got in the 80s. I don't think we will – I think we hit a pinnacle of – that's when, like, special effects really came into their own. Creativity and people were like, yeah, fuck it. Make a movie with Roddy Piper about him, like – fucking frogs in a town called Frogtown, and like he's the guy with the golden cock, and he can't, you know what I mean? It's like greenlit, here you go. And it's like they made the most craziest movies that you will never get made today, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah, exactly. Sleepaway Camp. I fucking love Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, yeah. I mean, fuck yeah.
Yeah. You know, like there's just so many films that just got greenlit that like I would love to be able to make today, and you just can't. Like if Evil Dead tried to get made today, it would not happen the way it did. If you tried,
oh, no, No.
Like, I'm sorry, the tree rape shit? Like,
yeah, that wouldn't fly nowadays.
Never in a million years. And
oh no.
Then, fuck it. Whatever, tree rape. Here you go, guys. Have fun.
It's great.
But like, there's something about the 80s, but especially certain years. Like, you look at 1985. That was a fucking year for movies. I think we got Fright Night, I think. We got Return of the Living Dead. We got Day of the Dead. Like, the list went on and on and on. I looked it up one time, and I was like, holy shit. There's a time where, like, you could have been at the movie theater, and it is just the entire
roster. Fucking horror.
Exactly. And it's nothing but classic horror.
Right. Like, the cream of the crop.
Exactly. And we don't, like, I don't think I can look at, the 2000s, and there was some great films that came out in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Great films that come out every year, but I don't think I can look at a year that had as many of amazing films as like in the 80s. You know, maybe like the year that like Jurassic Park came out. Okay, yeah, because you had Jurassic Park. I think you had Forrest Gump. You had like a lot of amazing stuff. But like, never are you gonna have what we had back then. I mean, I don't know. I'm like. There's also something that's magical about this. I think it's why they're trying to remake so many films.
Are you looking at my notes? Because that was my next question. I thought okay, I was like, on. Oh my God, Marcus, this is a great segue. because I wanted to ask about your thoughts on remakes, reboots, and especially mainly because I got the Munsters T-shirt on Rob Zombie's venture into 1313 Mockingbird Lane. How do you think that's going to work? And what do you think about the remakes and reboots of older films? Because to me, and I don't think I can include you into this, but in my opinion, Hollywood's run out of really good ideas, so let's just take and rehashing the same thing over and over with a director's maybe different point of view or you know, his little spin or hers little spin on it. What's your thoughts on that? Is there any good movies that you're looking forward to? And
so remakes for me, there are some remakes that I love. There are some, sure. But to me, I think people should if you're going to remake a movie, make it your own. John Carpenter's The Thing is the greatest, to me, is a perfect remake slash it's a perfect fucking script. It's a perfect movie. There's not a single slither of that film you can cut off and have the film get better. You know what I mean? Right. And to me, but if you watch The Thing from Another Planet and then you watch John Carpenter's The Thing, they are two completely different movies. That's right. How you fucking remake a movie. Or you look at The Fly, Vincent Price, The Fly, mm-hmm. and then you look at Jeff Goldblum, The Fly.
Hell yeah.
Completely different movies. That's how you remake it. Rob Zombie's, that's a whole thing for me. When it comes to certain remakes, I just sit there and I go, why the fuck did you remake The Hitcher? But to be a shot-for-shot remake of The Hitcher. The Hitcher is another classic piece of cinema.
Oh, yeah. That
is now obscure, which kills me. Because that was a film that I never thought was obscure because everyone's seen it. But now you can't get that film. It's impossible. Luckily, they're bringing it back in. But that's a waste of a remake.
Right.
I think... I'm not a big fan of remakes. I'm not a big fan of constantly just retelling the same story and over and over and over and over again. How many times can we hear it? How many times can we see it? Give me something new for the love of God. But there are some good ones that I really, really dig. I hate to say it. I really dig the Evil Dead remake. I think they actually did a great job with it. Do I think it holds a candle to the original? Fuck no. But it's also not the same movie.
Right.
They're not deadites. My biggest issue with the film is that they took out the one thing that separated the deadites from just zombies and demons, and that's the evil spirit that overtakes the body and the way that they act. That's not in that remake. That's all transferred through blood or whatever the fuck, and it's just, and I didn't know whether or not to be comedy or not, but like I loved all the practical shit. Like I loved the one guy, the blonde guy who kept getting attacked nonstop and died like 7 times. And I'm like, that's the shit that I love, you know? And like, I mean, come on, Jane Levy's fucking incredible in that movie, you know, but that's like, that's my thing. It's like, if you're going to make a remake, remake the fuck out of it, make it your own, do your thing and go all the way out there. And when it comes to Rob Zombie, it's very controversial. It's very hard to talk about, but let me start off by saying Devil's Rejects to me is one of the greatest pieces of cinema to come out in the 2000s. Hands down, it is in my top 5 favorite films of all time. I watched that movie 5 times in the theaters. I tried to watch it more, but I got booted out. I have a signed poster that's signed by almost everybody, minus Ross. Oh, wow. But I mean, it's Sid's on there. Rest in peace, Sid. Jeffrey Lewis, Tom Towles, William Forsythe, Bill Moseley. I've got everybody on there. Ken Foray. I got Michael Brennan saying, calling me a chicken fucker. It's amazing. like Devil's Rejects, I think is a masterful piece of cinema that people give me shit for this all the time. But I think it's a film that should be showcased in film classes to show you how to tell a story, but make it something that is, if you want to make it set in that time frame, that is how you fucking do it. You want to make a 70s film? That is a 70s movie. It just came out in 2005, I think.
Yeah, five. Yeah.
The only thing Devil's Rejects did that takes me out for a split second is when the knife goes into Priscilla Barnes and it's CG blood. That's the only moment where I'm like, oh, fuck. So I try to blink during that shot. but like everything else, the performances, everything, that is a perfect movie. You know, when it comes to like some of his other films, it's hit or miss for me. You know, when it comes to like the remake of Halloween, he did his own thing with it. He made it his own, and I respect that. But it's not my favorite. It's not, you know, to me, I wish he had just gone with either the prequel or just gone with a reboot that was his own instead of kind of trying to do both. Because I feel that I didn't get enough time with either characters to really
gotcha
him, like in that type of a thing. You know, 31, I thoroughly enjoy. I mean, Richard Brake as fucking Doomhead he's incredible. Yes. He's fucking incredible. But this is the thing. I've read a lot of stuff about what, you know, oh God, it's going to be Rob's, you know, he's doing monsters. He's going to fuck it up. Oh my God. They're all going to be swearing and like talking about chicken fucking and all this stuff. And I'm like, I think this is the film that's he's going to blow everyone away. I think he's going to actually showcase, because this is something that's near and dear to his heart. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be something that he actually does right. And I really, really am interested to see what a PG-13 Rob Zombie movie looks like.
Oh my God. Right?
It has to be PG-13. And it's Universal, right? Universal's, there's no way Universal's going to let him, you know, have like William Forsythe coming in and talking about, you know, raping people. And like, it's just not going to happen. Although I would love to see William Forsythe in a Munsters movie. But like, to me, I'm excited for it. I'm wary because it's like, I've been hurt in the past, but I haven't. But like, the one thing I can give Rob Zombie, and this is something he said, and I respect the fuck out of it. He goes, I would rather people come out of my films hating my movies or coming out of my films and loving them. The last thing I ever want is someone to come out and say, it's all right. And that's something, no matter what, you will never come out of a Rob Zombie movie and go, you have the wrong reaction.
No, exactly. You either love it or you hate it. And I do. I like that about Rob Zombie. Now, I, you know, going along with the whole Munsters thing, I've seen a lot on social media, people go, well, yo, I guess Sherry Moon's going to be in it, and this person and that person. But you made a good point, which is how I counter that. you love working with the same actors. It becomes a family. You get, you become very aware of their acting ability and how to put them in your film to where they shine in portraying the characters that you've written and you're trying to direct. So I'm like, hey, go fuck yourself, man.
If exactly.
Quentin Tarantino does the same thing. He uses a lot of this.
Tim Burton does the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
But that's the thing, though. That's also respectful to me. You know, he could have gone from Devil's Rejects and been, you know, and then done the remake of Halloween and be like, you know what? Fuck all you guys. Bye, Bill. Bye, Sid. Bye, everybody. And he could have fucking put, like, you know, Kevin Bacon in the role and, like, whoever else. But instead, you know, he brought them back. I mean, obviously, they're phenomenal actors. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, Bill Moseley's fucking amazing. I mean,
he's like the sweetest guy. And speaking of Bill, I met him. He signed. I have a Fangoria, and I got him to sign it.
Oh my god, he's a fucking legend.
He's great.
He's good in everything he's done too. He never owned it in.
Especially his band, the Cornbugs.
Yes.
That's hilarious, man. Once I start listening to it, every song is like a box of Cracker Jacks. You never know what the hell that surprise in that song is going to be. What's he going to be talking about? It's great.
Off the wall fucking shit, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But that's what I love about those, you know.
Like, exactly.
He's the guy that brought back Sid Haig. Sid Haig was retired. I don't know if he was retired, but he was done. He was like, you know, he was like, I have a cameo in Jackie Brown, whatever. But he came back in House of 1,000 Corpses, which to this day I think is one of the greatest reboots of Leatherface Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 3. I say that because it feels like that Part 3, and I love that film. I fucking love Leatherface Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 3. I know it gets a lot of shit. That film, every time I have a smile on my face from beginning to end, I fucking love that movie. But the thing about that is, like, House of 1,000 Corpses, you watch Sid Haig's parts, and he is on fire every fucking take, every shot, every performance. That film has a fucking look. It's got a vibe. It's got a feel. It's got a soundtrack that's through the roof.
Amazing. I mean,
it makes a statement, and, like, while a lot of people don't get it, and they think, you know, they chalk it up to just being, like, you know, too over the top. And I know he doesn't really like it that much because he's come out and he's like said, he's like, oh, I can't even watch it. That's a lot of first films. I can't watch my first film either. But it's one of those films that sticks with you. I rewatched it like a month ago. And I was like sucked right back in. I'm like, yeah, okay. This is a film that I think in about 20 years, I think people are going to go through all of Rob Zombie's catalog. And I think that there's going to be people going to look at him completely different. I don't think people are understanding him for some of his stuff. 31. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy 31.
I did too.
There's another film. It's called Slashers. It was made by Fangoria. It was made in like 2001. And it's kind of the same concept. It's back when like the reality shows were over the fucking top. And it's about a Japanese game show that bring the contestants in, and there's actual flashers, and it's all like
flashers.
Yes, super fun. Like, I love this movie. I love that movie. I can't believe you actually know it. That's amazing.
Oh yeah, I rented it from fucking Hollywood Video. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's how you said it. Like, it's impossible to find now. I got a DVD of it. Like, how there's not 20 of those movies by now. Like, it's just a great film. But if you like
it, it totally was. I didn't even think about that until you said it. It was the same concept. They're like, they had all these different types of killers.
Yep.
And it was like a game show. Like.
Yep. And you got the hillbilly. You got Chainsaw Charlie.
Yep.
Charlie, very mad. Hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. Oh my God. I love him. And then you had the preacher that came in. It was like his first time, and he gets killed right off the bat because he sucks.
Right.
Like, I mean, that. But like that film, like 31 is like all, like I would have loved to see 31, because you can, because like if you listen to the commentary, you can tell that they got hit by like so many budget constraints, which sucks because it's like there are parts of that film that I watch and I'm like, oh, I can tell you were trying to go for something awesome with this, like, and you know, but like, look, I love chainsaw battles, like I. You know, for the longest time, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 had the best, but I have to say that now Mandy may have taken over that role, you know, of best chainsaw battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was badass.
But, like, speaking of remakes, I mean, you know, like certain remakes I enjoy watching because they're just, they butcher the original so bad. Wicker Man. Yeah, I love the original, but that remake, it's a movie, man. It's, you know, it's a... I mean, it's Nick Cage, like, going full Cage. And it's, I mean, I'm a huge Nick Cage fan, too. Like, I'd love to work with him someday. I dream that one day I could work with him. But, like, he's like it's like there are certain things that you can do with a remake that you can actually improve on, you can do better with, you can do whatever. But, like, I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see the Munsters.
I can't wait for that one.
Yeah. I really want to see his casting choice. I mean, obviously, like, you know, Sherry Moon, you know, is going to be, my mind's blanking, Lily, I think. It's Lily Munster, right?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but it's going to be very interesting to see who he picks for Herman. I'm very interested to see who he picks.
Jeff Philip Daniels, I think.
That's what I heard.
His name? That's what I heard.
Rumor, though.
Yeah, it may be. That's the only name I've heard that's come out as far as that. But and another rumor I heard was Cassandra Peterson, of course, Elvira. There was rumored that she may play Lily, and Sherry plays the normal daughter, which I think that would have been a better casting choice.
That would be interesting.
Yeah,
that would actually be. Actually,
what a twist.
yeah
that's something I would like to see, because I think Sherry would do better playing and I can't think of her name right offhand, but I think
Marilyn.
Yeah, I think she would do actually a better job playing Marilyn than she would Lily. Yeah. That's just my thoughts.
We'll have to wait and see.
I know it's gonna be a good one. We've you know, hit the hour mark, Marcus. Man, this has been really, really fucking fun.
Yeah,
man.
This has been a lot of fun, guys.
And I again, we appreciate, you know, the time that you know you've taken out of your busy schedule. And I know the listeners or you know viewers are probably like, man, I want to know more about Night of the Living Dead 2. Sorry.
Hey,
not gonna happen this time. You just have to, you know, white knuckle it until this comes out. A lot of people are really excited about it, and
they should be. I can tell you all. I can tell you is this: is that it's gonna be its own story. It's gonna be like it's a sequel in the way that like Dawn of the Dead is a sequel to Night, and Day of the Dead is a sequel to Dawn, and it's like, you know, we're doing our own story. And I can guarantee you this, Laurie Terry and Jarlath are not just like cash grabs. They're not just going to be in it for 2 minutes. They are the three leads of this. So they are.
That's so badass.
Yeah, they are starring in it. We got some other amazing things that are going to be coming out. The story is its own story. And it's like, you know, the point is like what attracts me to Romero stuff is, it's engaging. The characters are engaging. Everything is engaging with it. And that's what we truly want to take from that. We want to be able to do that with this. You know?
Yeah. Right. That right there has me even more excited for this movie now.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, well, thanks, hey, I want to you know put you back in the backstage. We want to say bye off you know when we end the recording, and we're gonna end this out again. Marcus, hang on, and we're gonna talk to you here in just a minute. Dude, what a fun guy, man. You know how I do when I got guests on. I like to listen to, you know, other, you know, interviews or discussions that they do, and I knew this was gonna be fun, man.
Hell yeah.
Lot of cool stuff, man. Oh, I wish we could have known more about
Hey.
I felt the same way when we had David on last year, and that
all shut down.
He wanted so bad to tell us, you know, certain scenes that, you know, they were filming, they got interrupted due to the pandemic, but
it'll all come out.
Yes, it will. Jackal Monkey, thank you. We got Marcus Wade in the backstage. We're gonna go say bye. Thank you guys for listening once again. And hey, we're gonna see you real soon. We'll be making more guest announcements over there at Night Living Dreads on Facebook. Oh, you better stay tuned. Talk to you later.